Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:24 Irish Summertime. Today is July 11th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But let's start off with a review of what's happened this week, and golly, it's been a very eventful week. This was a week in which we saw stock markets come under renewed pressure, and a number of the better markets have now broken on the downside, the S&P being the biggest of those. It broke down this week below those January and March lows. Nasdaq actually remains still considerably above those levels, and in terms of relative performance, it's one of the better markets out there right now, with no exceptions. Also, this was a week in which we saw European indices come under renewed selling pressure. A number of those markets had already broken on the downside. The only one that hasn't just yet, and it does look like if the current trend remains intact next week, that the DAX will also break down. But the FTSE broke down today. It was down 2.69%, 145 points just today. And what we're starting to see now is an acceleration of what have been remarkably consistent downtrends over the last month or so. Well, in fact, it's almost 2 months at this point. Back at the beginning of May, we saw a lot of indices fail at the upper side of their ranges or just above the upper side of their sort of 3 to 4 month range. And now we're seeing markets breaking on the downside from the lower side of their ranges. And on that path downwards, they have been remarkably consistent. Sentiment has deteriorated considerably, and sentiment indicators are showing increasingly bearish extremes. But when a market becomes oversold, it can stay oversold for a considerable amount of time. I can't remember who said it, but markets can remain irrational longer than we can remain solvent. And certainly markets are accelerating right now. We saw that, for example, the CAC, which has been one of the weaker European markets, was down over 3% today. That's a really rather large downward dynamic. And while a number of commentators have been talking about how this market has lacked the high readings on the VIX that were associated with market bottoms in August last year and again then in January and in March, well, the VIX was pushing back up towards the 30 level in here today. Really rather a large move on the upside. I think that was 25, excuse me. It needs to push back above that 35 region to really tell us that we're into a bearish extreme. But it does look like we're getting there. The high today was close to 30, actually, and it closed out around 27.5. That's the VIX index. But what we're starting to see is that these markets are starting to accelerate on the downside. Acceleration is an ending of undetermined duration, and this occasion is unlikely to be any different. The big question is, when is the bounce going to come? That's the first question. The second question is, how big is the bounce going to be? And we don't know the answer to either of those questions. What we do know is that markets are becoming increasingly overextended on the downside. Sentiment is deteriorating considerably further, and this is not a time to becoming increasingly bearish, regardless of just how bearish the news actually is. Absolutely, there are fundamental stories behind why markets have drifted or fallen so considerably, so quickly over the last few months. But there is still the question as to how far sentiment can go without a relief coming. There is then the question about how much these markets will rally. From the January and March lows, we rallied for about 6 weeks, and they pushed back up quite considerably. If we get a rally coming in relatively soon, well, that will be probably due to a catalyst such as a federal bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, or a relief rally in some of those bank shares. It could also be because oil breaks this remarkably consistent uptrend. I'll speak more about oil later. Those are two possible catalysts. But the question will be, is when does this rally come in? Because if markets accelerate on the downside and they drift considerably below those January and March lows, there's a potential for those lows to become an area of resistance on the way back up. if that rally starts to come in relatively quickly, it's unlikely to be a very important area of resistance. But if we see markets falling considerably below those January and March lows, then there is potential for them to encounter some resistance on the way back up in any relief type of rally. And I think that we're coming increasingly close to that type of activity, although there's no evidence of it just yet. Asia has been also quite weak, but there have been a number of standout markets. For example, Hong Kong is still down towards the January and March lows, but rallied reasonably well in here today and has been steadier than the majority of markets around these levels. And Japan has been a relative outperformer. Inflation, which has been greeted with fear and trepidation right around the world, has been greeted relatively sanguinely in, if that's a word, in Japan, because deflation has been the worry there for such a long time. And Japan is performing considerably better than the majority of other markets in terms of yen. Of course, in other currencies, it's not doing nearly as well. So those are two markets that have the potential to rally better than most when we get some relief from the unremittingly bearish news that we're getting in here right now. This was also a week in which we saw a considerable amount of contagion selling hitting the commodities sector, and it wasn't just country indices, but a number of those leading commodity funds and a number of leading commodity shares, as well as the commodities themselves, came under some selling pressure this week. We saw that a number of the soft commodities, particularly the grains, were sold off rather heavily earlier on in the week, steadied up towards the end of the week, and a number of those commodity shares have also undergone some rather bearish selling pressure. And of course, that is at least in part due to the fact that with bad positions and sentiment deteriorating, then losing positions, it's, I suppose, from a psychological perspective, when we have a losing position, it's the type of thing that keeps us up at night. And when the light finally goes on and we say, well, what can I do to get myself out of this situation? The answer is to sell. But when we realize the loss as opposed to the paper loss, that creates a hole in our balance sheet, and good positions are then sold to fill the gap. And that is where contagion selling comes from, and we've certainly seen a degree of that this week. That is also a signal that sentiment is reaching a point where we're getting to an extreme of sentiment. That's just one more signal. So what we have seen is that commodity markets have been, without the shadow of a doubt, the best performers over the last 6 months, and they have given up some of those gains in the last week or so. But they are also, in relative terms, better performers than the vast majority of others. I think it's a very big question as to whether they continue to perform on the upside when we see some relief coming in other stock markets. They've performed so remarkably well over the last 6 months that there may be some respite for them, and they're probably in need of some consolidation. Whereas some of those Asian markets are quite oversold and valuations are improving quite considerably, I think that there is a good chance we're going to see some of those Asian stock markets outperforming some of the resources markets whenever we get the next rally coming. But we will certainly see how that performs, and the charts will certainly tell us which is the better one to keep an eye on. Then we also have what's been happening with government bonds. Bonds have rallied spectacularly well in the last month or so, and we saw treasuries heading back up towards, I think it was 118, but they had a massive downward dynamic here today. That certainly capped the advance in the short term, and it's probably a shorting signal. We had seen them come right back up towards 118. That had been an area of resistance all the way through April and early May, and there is a good chance that this really large downward dynamic has capped this advance. So Treasuries have been in this gradual topping out process, which peaked back in January. They've come nowhere near hitting the high that we saw them hit in January, and they've been in a gradual process where yields have been rising. Over the very long term, it looks like that bond yields bottomed in 2003. This occasion, where we saw bond prices heading for record highs, on the yield charts didn't actually go back towards the didn't break the lows that we saw in 2003. We've now got a higher low and yields have recovered somewhat. And the process that we're in at the moment, where massive injections of liquidity have helped to stem the banking crisis, certainly not avert it, have probably lengthened the credit cycle. And that probably means that we're going to see a position where yields are going to go sideways more than upwards for the next few years as interest rates gradually start to push back upwards, certainly not in the short term, but potentially over the well, almost certainly over the medium and longer term. And that feeds in through into the inflationary cycle, because while inflation is a worry in here with oil pushing upwards and the commodity sector, most certainly now in a secular bull market and maintaining higher prices right across the board, this is starting to make a reassessment of what the potential is for inflation right across the world. We have politicians starting to talk about a food crisis and an energy crisis. And that's not something that's going to go away anytime soon. We have billions of people entering the global economy. The population of the world has doubled in the last 20 or 30 years, or in the last 40 years, certainly. And we have almost a billion new consumers entering the global markets, and their per capita consumption of all commodities is rising. And the more of those people that enter the so-called middle classes and consume are creating demand for all types of commodities. And that is inflationary in and of itself, because there is a supply and elasticity of basic commodities. The world can only produce so much food. And while it is certainly not a laudable fact, it is a fact that we have millions, if not billions, of people who find it difficult to feed themselves in the world today. If those people suddenly start to move out of abject poverty and start buying food, that is going to create a more competitive environment for agricultural commodities, and we'll see prices going up. That is something that we're probably going to have to live with for quite a long time until we figure out and get our acts together as a global community in actually producing lots and lots more food and breaking down trade barriers. But that's not something that's going to happen anytime soon. So that is a fundamental support for the grain markets and for the food markets. But because food markets are determined by weather and plantings, they're remarkably volatile, so they're best bought following corrections, and we've just had a remarkable run on the upside, and they're looking quite overextended at the moment. So investing at these levels is probably more gambling than investing, whereas waiting for them to become bombed out, as they eventually inevitably will, is probably the better time to buy any of the agricultural commodities, and certainly the rest of the commodity sector as well. The big elephant in the room is oil. Oil remains in a secular bull market, and that's probably not going to end anytime soon. We're only starting to talk now about replacing oil or carbon-based energy production with green energy production. And it takes years to put this type of infrastructure in place, and it takes even longer to develop the technology necessary. And there are still technology holes in the whole green argument that need to be filled with some innovation, and whichever company creates that innovation is going to do very, very well. But it is an open question, and certainly technology is not my forte. What we see in the oil market right now is that we remain in a consistent uptrend. What we are starting to see is that oil is finding it more difficult to maintain its breaks on the upside. We've had a number of breaks on the upside which have not been maintained. The most consistent thing on the oil chart is the fact that it has higher lows. This has always been the case, and oil has been a remarkably volatile commodity over time. Although it must be said that the move upwards from $80, well, from $85 up to the highs today, is probably the most consistent it's traded in quite a long time. But the most recent reactions, the last two reactions, pulled back into the previous range, and the upward breaks were not particularly significant, and we saw that oil hit a new high today at $147, but closed out the day below $145. So it is slowly being unable to maintain its upward breaks, and potentially is starting to create a wedging type characteristic. A wedging type characteristic is our type 2 ending characteristic from the chart seminar. To break out of this type of this potential pattern, it needs to sustain an upward break, break upwards above $145, sustain that upward break, and then improve upon it. And the next consolidation needs to be above $145. The problem with a type 2 topping characteristic is the fact that it can take a very long time, because this loss of momentum, where supply is gradually gathering above the market, creates a vacuum of demand below the market as people see that trading oil becomes less profitable, so they raise their stops. The massive reaction against the prevailing trend will probably be a massive downward dynamic, which will take out higher lows very, very quickly, and it will be a shock to the market. The whole impetus there being on the shock value of the move and the potential bolt from the blue. What is starting to become evident is that it is becoming profitable to short into the highs in oil. I'm not doing this, and I would like to be short of oil. I think that it is a very, very risky business, and oil does remain in a consistent uptrend. The only negative that we have now is that we have this slight wedging characteristic and its inability to sustain the upward breaks. But it could easily go back into a consistent uptrend, and as long as it has the progression of higher lows, then that is a key component within this overall uptrend. The level of $135 has now gained even greater importance. We've mentioned that $135 would have been a break of the midpoint danger line, $130 would be a lower low, and $120 would be a break of the uptrend. But with this break to a new high, $135 would now characterize a break of the higher lows, and $130 and $120 still remains the most important touchstone in the consistency of oil's uptrend. So it remains a remarkably risky and volatile situation, and certainly not one just yet to consider buying into. And personally, I'm sitting on my hands right now because I believe that the risks are remarkably high. What we saw today in the precious metal sector is probably one of the better moves out there, because gold broke above $950 today. It wasn't quite able to hold on to the whole gain, and I'm just pulling the chart up as I speak, but this was an emphatic upward break, and as long as it can maintain it, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Gold closed out today at $963, which is actually quite close to the highs on the day. $950 has been an area of resistance over the last 4 months, and we are within striking distance of gold's highs near $1,032. That's not particularly far away. Oil is the overriding concern for the vast majority of investors in here today. And stock markets have been on a seesaw where, with oil pushing upwards to new highs, we have stock markets moving to new lows. And gold has sort of been in the middle, because gold had this remarkably strong upward move, which climaxed back in March. But it's been in a reactive phase since then, which has steadily been gaining momentum since the lows back in mid-June. Today's upward break above $950 is an emphatic upward break, and it does now raise the possibility that gold is going to go back and test its highs. As long as oil continues to hit new highs and remains within the area of $140, then that is a tailwind for precious metals, and that is a positive for people investing in that area. The other important move that we've seen this week has been in the industrial metals. Industrial metals have led on the upside, and with the infrastructure that is being built in China today, and they have plans to build multiple new cities and massive highway and information networks right across the country, India really is only getting started, despite a number of years of people saying that India needs to get its infrastructure going. They are still quite slow to get it moving. And of course, infrastructure is not only going on, infrastructure construction is not only going on in the emerging economies. We are going to see, in all likelihood, going to see a massive building of infrastructure during the next presidency, whoever is lucky enough to win the election in November in the USA. And that will constitute road building, bridge building, and there is a lot of energy infrastructure which also needs to get put back in place to offset the massive amounts of capital that are leaving the country paying for foreign oil. And I anticipate that that is going to become an election issue over the next over the coming months. So infrastructure development is very much to the fore in our global themes. The per capita consumption of all commodities, but particularly industrial metals, is also rising considerably. However, industrial metals have been probably the most unloved of the commodities over the last couple of years. Copper and aluminium have been in two-year consolidations. Lead peaked about a year ago, and nickel peaked over a year ago. Zinc peaked even before that, and tin is only now moving into a medium-term correction. It's probably going to take another year before we see the likes of zinc or lead moving back up towards their highs, but the chances are that they're going to get there. This week we saw upward dynamics in zinc, lead, aluminium. Aluminium broke to new highs. This is the completion of a two-year consolidation, and you really do need to look at that chart over the very long term, because this has been a remarkable consolidation. And there is the potential for aluminium to reassert this secular bull market and go on to make significant new highs. It's got plenty of support underneath it right now. What it needs to do, of course, first is to consolidate its gain, or to at least hold the gain, and the next reaction to come back and test the upper side of this two-year range. Aluminium is probably the industrial metal that is going to perform best in the current environment, followed very closely by copper. And copper is very interesting, because the argument surrounding copper over the last few years is that it has been a cyclical bull market, and that it was going to go right back down and test its long-term average. But of course, the long-term average is remarkably low, considering that industrial metals did absolutely nothing for more than 20 years. And that skews the long-term price data and the expectations of analysts. There is a very good chance that copper is going to also reassert its overall uptrend, and that is going to cause a reassessment for the entire industrial metals sector, because copper is by far the largest and most important of the industrial metal of the industrial metals, and that is probably the biggest of the contrarian plays out there right now. There was an interesting email today from an Italian subscriber asking about contrarian plays, because there are lots of people talking about the potential for a rally in stock markets, and certainly sentiment is deteriorating quite considerably. I do believe that that is still a contrarian opinion, because markets wouldn't be coming this overextended if we didn't have lots of people selling into them. So talking about a bounce occurring, I think, is common sense at this juncture. But the big question is, how far do markets rally, and is this a developing downtrend, or is there recovery potential? Bearishness is so remarkably bearish, but that it has been compared to how bearish we were back in 2002 and 2003. But markets haven't fallen nearly as much now as they had then. So there is a big question to be asked as to how much the next rally is going to push back up into those overhead trading ranges, and whether they can then sustain breaks on the upside from those trading ranges. That is a question that will be answered in the coming months, I have little doubt. But I think what is a truly contrarian argument in here right now is that industrial metals are probably going to outperform most of the other commodities in the medium term. They have been uniquely unloved of the commodities sector, and upward dynamics for so many of them in this week from quite depressed levels in the cases of zinc and lead are very encouraging. At the very least, they probably put a short to medium term low under those markets, and there is at least the potential that we're going to see zinc and lead move into a support building phase prior to higher levels over the medium to longer term. Over the very long term, I have very little doubt that we're going to see all of these industrial metals, indeed all commodities, hitting significant new all-time highs, because commodity cycles tend to be long. And when we just tie that in with the demographics, because we have massive young populations in the big population centers of the world, and young people, as they grow up and get jobs and have families of their own and get homes of their own, start to consume more as well, just by that very process. And if those countries are becoming wealthier and those young people are growing up at a better quality of life, then their consumption goes up even more. And that applies to just about all commodities. The ways to profit from this are either going to be invest directly in those countries, and we also see that those countries are starting to have much stronger currencies, which reflect the health of those economies. The other way is to invest in domestic, well, at least for Westerners, domestic companies that benefit from the growth in particularly Asia. And that has been a main driver behind the positive strategy of buying miners like BHP and Rio Tinto. And there is also, of course, the strategy of just buying the commodities themselves, because they are performing considerably better than most other asset classes at the present time. That won't always be the case. They will go through medium-term corrections as well, but over the longer term, commodities are going to perform better than other asset classes. And it will be commodity-related shares will be the ones that will keep pace best with how commodities are performing, and potentially outperform where you have the bonus of implied leverage in the shares. What we also see, though, is that the Asian dollar index is moving gradually back up towards the highs we saw before the Asian financial crisis, whereas the dollar index broke below 72 today And that breaks the progression of higher lows over the last 4 months. There's no real reason that I can think of why to justify a major dollar recovery in here right now. And there's the potential for the dollar to go back down to the 71 level on the dollar index and to break even lower than that. We are at a point where there are a number of factors acting against the benefit of the dollar, and it is a congenitally weak currency, and you have to compare it against other currencies, and there isn't any great reason to hold dollars over the long term, apart from the security of the US, of the US government, and that's not a particularly secure investment right now, given the returns that we're getting from the dollar. Asian currencies remain relatively undervalued. Of course, in the competitive world of globalization, there's no country wants a strong currency, but there are countries who want a weaker currency more than others, and the US is very much in that camp at the moment. But we have countries such as China or Singapore, where the currency appears to be on a trajectory going upwards, and that is certainly a bonus for people investing in that region. That's pretty much it for me for the moment, and we can just, I suppose, a quick word on the Asian stock markets, because most of what I've talked about has been in the West. But Asian stock markets are still very much impacted by the Wall Street leash effect. Those overlay charts that I posted today of the S&P and the H shares in Hong Kong are instructive, because when Wall Street is steady to rising, that allows liquidity to flow out around the world, and you have massive outperformance from other semi-related stock markets. But when liquidity contracts globally, then we see that a lot of markets have had a very similar type reaction to the liquidity contraction. That is probably to be expected. But what we also know is that when this credit crisis finally ends and liquidity starts to become more available once again, that those other markets around the world which have a sound fundamental story will be the ones that will perform most and perform better. And Asia is certainly strong in that group of countries that can perform very well. And with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but have a good one, and thank you for your time.